Hi there. Oh, I am
Hello,
so excited
and welcome to
talk
to How to
about
Parent Your Highly Sensitive
the appropriate
Child Like a Ninja.
For highly
I'm
sensitive
your host, Megan Thompson,
today.
Licensed
so,
clinical professional
if you are wondering
counselor
whether or not
and
your
registered
child's
play therapist supervisor, we at MTC
age,
teach parents
today
how to eliminate the daily meltdown
day.
And
Let's
shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question. How can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place.
Hi, I'm Megan Thompson with Megan Thompson Coaching, and we help parents help eliminate the daily meltdown cycle in their home. When you're parenting a sensitive kid who is losing it on a daily basis, it is so overwhelming. Your child might be hitting or kicking, or screaming, or throwing whatever in sight, whatever's on the table, tossing, you know, the chair down when they're upset, or even running up to their room, slamming doors, and hiding under the bed. And this could, you know, get even more extreme than that. But this is typically what we hear is happening in the household of our clients, right? And so I want to highlight the experience that you might be having. And one of the things that I think is so important today, especially when parenting a sensitive kid, is trying to understand what's appropriate behavior for a child and then what is inappropriate behavior, right? So we're going to go through a few age groups for you in parenting your sensitive kid. We're going to move all the way from young infancy all the way up to adolescence, and we're going to break it down today, high level, right? This is one of the things that we teach our clients to understand, and I want to focus on the intention of today's show to really understand what might be playing into your belief system or where you might be stuck, right? Now, obviously, you know that we have a process to stop the constant daily meltdowns over and over again if your child is losing it or shutting down and refusing to follow through on expectations that you've set forth that are general everyday expectations, then this can lead you to wonder whether or not your expectations are too high, especially if you're a parent who is gentle parenting, right? If you're trying to set an emotional expectation that your child is learning through your relationship with them, and you want them to feel heard and understood and that their needs are valid and that their behavior is indicating an unmet need. All of these things are really important when we're thinking about the parent-child attachment, right? Your child's emotional connection to you is necessary for their emotional development, right? A thorough, committed and connected relationship with you is so, so important for your child's soft skills, if you will, their emotional intelligence, their ability to act on their empathy, their ability to manage their emotions and decrease them enough to make decisions that are not based in feeling, but are considering the facts, right? And also helping your child make autonomous decisions, right? Decisions that they can handle at 3, 5, 9, 14, 17. And then I also want to highlight what decisions your child might think they can handle and where you need to step in as the parent, as the adult who is older, wiser, right? More knowledgeable. Even if you are feeling like you don't have the appropriate knowledge, if your child's having daily meltdowns, it's very likely you might be feeling inadequate to solve this problem. You might be reading all kinds of books, Googling till the ends of the evening into the wee hours of the morning when you can't sleep. And these are all symptoms of the meltdown cycle. So I want to highlight where you could be stuck, what your child might be demonstrating, what behaviors might be contributing to the problem on your end, as well as your child's behavior, that you might have reduced your expectation. And I think this is an important conversation. Now we see, or at least I see, my For You page and all kinds of platforms, whether that be TikTok or Instagram, any of the reels that I'm getting fed, they're all related to parenting and child development. Because this is what I do for a living, right? I'm an expert in this. And so, and because I post on these platforms, I see what other professionals are teaching and what other parents are talking about. because I'm also a parent myself of young children, 7 and 1.5 at the time of this recording. So obviously the social medias are telling me what I'm supposed to be listening to. And I got to tell you that if you're listening to some of the stuff that I'm being fed, then you're in for a world of confusion, right? So I want to focus on this because one thing that I think is really helpful from the internet communication is that we get to talk about these topics that you might have just felt super alone in. Raising a highly sensitive kid, 1 out of every 5, right? That means that 20% of the population is highly sensitive. This is a temperament, a disposition. Your child's general experience of the world is impacted by whether or not your child's highly sensitive. Doesn't mean that they're broken, right? Doesn't mean it's the only positive quality in their life. And especially if they're struggling with meltdowns or shutdowns or refusals, you might not be able to see the positive right now. That this is a strength, that this is a gift, right? And you might also be wondering whether or not your expectations are high enough or your expectations are too high, right? So I want to make sure that we're all clear here because you might be consulting a pediatrician, you might be consulting your friend who's a therapist, potentially your friend who's a trauma therapist who might have different expectations for kids based on their clinical knowledge, or a school counselor, right, who has potentially seen all kinds of things throughout the course of their career. And if you're raising a child who feels big feelings, who notices small details, who is communicating wise beyond their years when they're calm, who is very overwhelmed by sensory or detail subtleties when they are not calm, then it is important for you to listen up because your child is highly likely to be highly sensitive. And the general run-of-the-mill gentle parenting knowledge will fall short in serving your family. So here's the deal. What I see out on the interwebs right now is a plethora of information that is highlighting neurodivergence, that the fact that people think differently than you, right? That you might be thinking about the world differently. And some people are, in fact, neurodivergent. They're autistic. They fit the criteria for ADHD, right? And so some of these adults are highlighting this in their personal experience, in their childhood experience. And some of these adults are overcompensating for that by touting all of their life experience to fit into the box of neurodivergence because they were chronically invalidated as children. So Marsha Linehan's research in the 1960s, she started identifying the highly sensitive trait, and she started to notice that some people were born sensitive, and when they were raised in a chronically invalidating environment where they were told that they were wrong, where they were told that their experience was too big, too dramatic, too sensitive, all too much, they ended up developing risky behaviors. So adolescence, early adolescence, and into adulthood, these kids started to hurt themselves or others. They engaged in significantly life-threatening behaviors, self-harm, suicidality, and alcoholism, you know, drug abuse, etc., right? And they had serious problems trusting others and also serious problems being independent. So they created this push-pull dynamic in their lives because they were told constantly that they were too much and they needed to chill out, right? So what happens is that these children grew up to adults who met the criteria for borderline personality disorder. I'm not going to go into that today. I've done a show on that before. But what's important to understand is that if these people in adulthood felt chronically overwhelmed and chronically invalidated, maybe didn't meet the criteria for borderline personality disorder, they kept healthy relationships, however, they were chronically invalidated, they're actually highly sensitive, they might realize their brain operates differently, and they might wonder whether or not they're autistic. They might wonder whether or not they have ADHD, right? Because it's difficult to concentrate when you are constantly thinking that there's something wrong with you. So it might be easier for you to get distracted if you're constantly taking in a lot of information from the world, and it's difficult for you to sort what's important and what's not because you're always second guessing your gut, right? So some people are labeled with an ADHD diagnosis because of that distractibility, because of that difficulty focusing, when in fact it's actually emotional dysregulation and a lack of trust in one's intuition and a lack of understanding of one's personal needs, because you're constantly told that you're wrong, which is a side effect of chronic invalidation. And for a highly sensitive person, this can lead you to wonder whether or not your brain is working in its perfect design, and if there's something that makes it not common, right? And so you might resonate with some characteristics of ADHD, but not others, but it fits enough, right? So we have these adults who are all over the internet, self-diagnosing and then self-affirming and then self-preaching. So it's really important that we demonstrate compassion to people who are trying to figure out what makes, you know, what to make of their lives and what to make of the fact that they were parented in a way that didn't meet their needs. And it's also super important that you're learning from someone who knows the difference between ADHD, autism, and the highly sensitive personality trait. Because if you're taking 3-minute snippets and you're trying to piece it all together yourself, what you're doing is you're creating a patchwork quilt of expectations for your child who might be 4, 5, 9, 15. And you're not looking at the whole picture. Your child is a whole body, right? They have a mind, right? They have a heart. They have an emotional system. They have a nervous system. And they also have an environment within which they are growing up. And for highly sensitive kids, the environment matters more than their actual nervous system wiring, because when their environment isn't effective at helping them regulate, they actually will present with personality traits that are explosive. And they might be labeled the explosive child, right? Many of you might have read Dr. Green's work, and it is so complicated and ineffective at solving this problem because it is a very logical system. Right? Many of you might have just followed the regular old process of counting to 3 and sending your kid to timeout, or using spanking and realizing that that's psychologically damaging and physically hurtful, right? And so you might have been on a journey of all kinds of approaches, and now you're listening to me, right? And what myself and my team have noticed over the course of my 15-year post-master's career is that highly sensitive people are hurting around the world. They make up 50% of the population that goes to therapy. Constantly, they're diagnosed with an anxiety disorder or depression. Maybe they figure out that they're highly sensitive. And then maybe they go down social media rabbit holes to figure out what's quote unquote truly wrong with them, when in fact there's nothing broken. They just never learned how to manage their big emotions and dissipate them out of their nervous system. And so what happens is that this constant psychoanalysis, self-psychoanalysis, constant analysis paralysis, and constant distractibility due to emotional dysregulation leads to someone feeling like they don't understand up from down and left from right in terms of what makes up their own brain structure. And you have to look at that at the end of the road. This is a side effect of how they were raised in childhood, right? And so when you look at it from that context, then you get to wonder, is this person's lived experience, the lived experience that your child is inevitably going to have, or can something different be happening for you if you change your child's childhood now? And I want to speak about this because there is a fad, there is a trend going on right now focused on labeling children based on adults' experiences. And guys, this isn't new. We've had psychologists understand that adults are motivated by money and then try to motivate kids by reward sticker charts. 1960s stuff, guys. This is old, archaic behaviorism and at the core, and we're just trying to repeat it and reflavor it and rebrand it, call it ODD, call it pathological demand avoidance, call it autism when it's not really autism, and understand that this is just lay people trying to figure out how to raise children and prevent what they experienced in their childhood. And I totally get it. Listen, if you're listening, if you're one of those people who are just shouting from the rooftops so that your experience is valid, I absolutely get it. The way you were raised was not appropriate and not effective. And it's also true that if children right now are raised in the same manner that you were raised, they would be hurting, and it's worth talking about, right? That's why we do what we do here at MTC. However, it doesn't mean that we need to overcompensate and reduce our standards for our kids because adults who are raised in chronically invalidating or condescending or overly critical homes are hurting now as adults. This is important because for you as a parent, you might have come across low demand parenting, and you might have come across higher demand parenting, right? Tiger parenting, helicopter parenting. And as a parent who recognizes that the gentle parenting process of understanding that your child needs a positive relationship with you and you need to understand your kid in order for your kid to learn to understand them, you might be swayed by thinking that if your kid is yelling at you because you've asked them to put on their socks, then maybe that's a demand they can't tolerate right now and you should reduce the demand. And I am here to tell you that that is baloney pants. Absolutely ridiculous. And overcompensation for someone whose needs was not met appropriately. And as a result, they are touting that that your child's needs should be reduced. And we've helped countless families shift out of this dynamic without doing that. You can hold standards that your three-year-old can put on their own socks, that your five-year-old can get their whole body dressed without meltdowns. And you can notice that you do not need to reduce your expectations for your child to live a regularly fulfilling life just because right now they are telling you that their experience internally, emotionally is too much. You can have standards for your family. You can have high standards for your family. Now, if you shame your kid because they're not meeting them right now, or you get explosive because you're fried at the end of the day and you regret it, yeah, you should regret it. We don't want you doing that. That feels crappy, right? We don't want to do that. But I also encourage you not to overcompensate and reduce your expectations and move into low demand appropriate or a low demand perspective, because the methods out there have overcomplicated it. And so therefore you're swinging to the other end of the pendulum, which is what I've been saying for years is passive parenting, right? The first time that I introduced this on this platform, I believe was in 2020 when everybody and their mother was running like chickens with their heads cut off during a pandemic, right? And this was something that we had been seeing for years pre-pandemic. And I have a show where I still send this out to parents because it is so, so relevant today. Pressuring versus passivity is something that is so important. As human beings, we tend to move to extremes, and then sometimes we write books about them and say that it's the newfangled thing. You need to be discerning, mom, dad, listening to me, caring parent. You need to be discerning. If you want your kid to be emotionally independent, if you want your kid to feel good about themselves, then you should hold them to the expectation that they can get dressed. You should hold them to the expectation that they can help you take the trash out, that they can put trash away, that they can experience keeping their hands to themselves when they're emotionally dysregulated, that they can experience using kind language when they're emotionally dysregulated. That is absolutely an expectation you can have for your 3, 4, 5, 14, 17-year-old. Your child might not do it perfectly, but it is absolutely an expectation you need to hold for your kid, because otherwise we'll have a millennial in the basement situation before you know it. And you and I both know that you did not put all this effort in raising your kid only to keep doing it when they're 24 and they're 25 and they're 26 and working them through college, or even watching them fail in college because they're finally independent. And listen, I worked hard and I partied way too hard in college. I overcompensated for my lack of emotional intelligence. And that meant that I escaped my emotions through alcohol in my young adulthood. and including in my college life. So I'm not saying that holding standards as the only expectation is the best way to go. Didn't work out for me. I had, you know, super high drive, was successful, and then drowned my emotions and the weekends. That is not the best way to live, right? So with that being said, I had to do my own personal work after college, after becoming a therapist even, because I experienced overwhelm and it started to eat away at my mind. When my sister developed anorexia as a highly sensitive person and I couldn't sleep. That's the first time that I finally ended up accessing professional support. And I didn't want to complain day in and day out about where I was. Didn't really realize that the imbibing of alcohol and waiting for the weekend mentality wasn't the best way to cope either, right? But I was young, not very smart in that respect, not very self-aware, but I figured it out. You know what got me figuring it out? Coaching. A coach helped me with that. Because the coach told me, hey, listen, you're ruminating, you're thinking, you're money winning, quarterbacking every little situation, you're trying to front run. Do you know that that's worry? Did you know that that's actually highly ineffective? Did you know that this is a complete waste of time and you can turn your brain into a more effective process of processing your emotions? Wait, what? Guess what? The therapist that I hired to help me with this process told me that I was wrong for being mad and that I should feel better soon. They were so ineffective. That was such a waste of time because I vented and I guess she didn't like it, but she didn't have a better process for me. But the coach that I hired helped me notice that my mental process was keeping me stuck. And then I learned effective skills, go figure, right? And that was the first process of my experience. You can absolutely raise a kid where you hold their standards and you use shaming and you use traditional parenting and you explode by the time you're done of trying to give them patience and multiple warnings. And eventually you're going to fry yourself out, right? So this passive parenting process doesn't work because you end up reacting and moving into reactive parenting and pressuring parenting just by nature of the fact that you're a human being and you are not designed as a parent to be dressing your nine-year-old. Your nine-year-old can do that. If they're physically capable, then they can be emotionally capable. And so it's really, really important to understand that kids might have such sensory overwhelm needs. Kids might have emotional overwhelm needs, but that does not mean that we debase them into thinking that they're incapable. They are literally feeling incapable, and that's why they're not managing their emotions. So I'm not speaking to you because you should feel ashamed of yourself. That is not true. But I am speaking so passionately about this because colleagues in this dynamic are setting kids up for failure because they're teaching parents just like you that you should lower your standards. And I'm here to tell you that your standards are absolutely okay. A three-year-old can manage the fact that they feel the urge to hit and reduce it so that by the time they're five, they're absolutely done with hitting. We don't want to see six-year-olds hitting, guys. It's inappropriate for a six-year-old to be hitting. It's inappropriate for a six-year-old to be melting down. A six-year-old can scrunch their face and raise their voice and use kind language while yelling a couple times a week. And highly sensitive kids can be demonstrating that behavior. So if your nine-year-old is going a mile a minute, having meltdowns, then none of that behavior is appropriate. All right? None of that behavior is appropriate. So does that mean we reduce expectations? No. Does that mean we expect them to ride it out? No. Does that mean we just stay an emotional container for an hour and a half while your kid is spewing all kinds of language at you, hoping and waiting and wishing that by the time they're done with it, you can have a kind conversation about it, where they're remorseful and they're stuck in their shame at that point? No. That's not where our standards need to go, right? So here's the deal. Kids, any kid who's developmentally on target is not having meltdowns beyond the age of five unless their life has been flip-flopped upside down, right? They have a no good, terrible, very bad day, like Alexander in that book when we were reading it when we were kids. Or they experience a traumatic event or multiple traumatic events, right? Or if they're autistic. Now, level one autism, we're not seeing meltdowns, right? So I'm talking level 2, level 3 autism. That's when we're seeing meltdowns, right? So if your child, because level 1 autistic kids can manage their emotions in a safe manner, in a developmentally appropriate manner, but would be more overstimulated faster, okay? But they could still have the verbal capacity to communicate their needs and be taught that process, right? So it is so, so critical that we stop reducing our child's potential just because the processes that you've been following haven't gotten you to where you want to go. So a very dear coach, consultant of mine, friend of mine, mentor said, never shift your summit. Never change the summit that you want to climb. The tip top of that summit that you want to climb as a parent, you get to decide that that's fixed. I will, come heck or high water, raise a family where my children are safe and collaborative and communicative, and we sit down to dinner without arguments 6 days a week, right? And if we do have an argument, it is a peak and a fall, and it lasts under 5 minutes because that's developmentally appropriate for an emotionally healthy household. If that is part of your dream, then come heck or high water, you better make it happen, right? Isn't that why we're here on this earth? To live our best lives now? So you get to have that. And it is developmentally appropriate to expect that of parents who have children who are 5 and up. If your kiddo is 4 and they're having meltdowns multiple times a week, still developmentally appropriate, right? Now, if you've got a teenager who like occasionally swats their 8-year-old brother, we're going to give them a look and we're going to say, hey, it's not appropriate. Can you use your words, please? And they have the capacity to use their words. And then they apologize immediately and they do it. That's developmentally appropriate. If you've got a 9-year-old who's smacking their 6-year-old sister in the face and then struggling to accept responsibility for several hours until all of a sudden they explode in their room and they toss something and then finally they sob in sorrow and remorse, that's not developmentally appropriate. Your child has a problem with managing their emotions, right? So I think it's so critical that we look at this in the big picture. Because if we're just trying to get through the day to day, what you're tolerating is an experience of what I call survival mode. Your child is struggling and you're just trying to keep your head above water. And through our process, we help our clients break out of survival mode. Survival mode is daily meltdowns, daily hitting, daily screaming, daily cussing, multiple times a week, any of those behaviors above the age of 4. That means that if your child, even at 13, is going through puberty and they are experiencing this intensity, that we wouldn't be looking to see that on a daily basis. That's not developmentally appropriate, even for a teenager with hormones raging and puberty happening. Because your kid feels crappy doing that. They're not able to turn around and apologize or name it. That means that there's something missing where they're feeling blocked by their emotional intensity and something in the family dynamic is keeping them stuck, right? So what does work? First and foremost, the entire conversation we've been having today for about half an hour so far is that your expectations need to remain steady. You cannot shift your expectations and downgrade them and convey to your child that you don't think that they're capable, because they will show you that you're right. Whether you're right or wrong, you're right, right? Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Somebody famous said that. I'm not going to go look it up. Your assumptions of your kids' possibilities are directly impacted by who is in your ears, right? Who are you listening to? Who are you talking to? If you're talking to your friends and their kids are not experiencing emotional intensity or emotional reactivity at this level, and then you tell yourself, well, maybe that means my kid is different. There's something wrong with my kid. Then what you're listening to is yourself and your lowered expectations and your low self-esteem in this dynamic, right? Now, I know, you and I both know, that you're very capable. You're probably very accomplished in many avenues of your life. And in this one avenue, you're letting your sense of self-inadequacy talk you down and reduce your standards, Would you do that to your kid? When they stood up, they toddled, they took a couple steps, and then they fell down on their bum? Would you say, you know what, maybe my kid just isn't a walker? So then why are you saying that when your child is losing their mind multiple times a day or multiple times a week? Maybe my kid just isn't an emotional regulator. Maybe I have the wrong standards. Maybe I need to reduce expectations. If your kid is in a traumatic situation or they're criticized by anyone in their household, or they're being bullied, or they're being, you know, being told that they're not enough constantly, or that there's something wrong with them, yeah, they're going to freak out. That sucks, right? Sucks to feel that. And so they're going to let it out in the only way they know how. So what I think is important to understand is if that's happening in your home, then it is time for you to take charge. It is time for you to shift the dynamic. And it's time for you to book a call with our team, because you don't have to live like this and your child doesn't have to live like this, because life is full of sugar plums and rainbows. And it's also true that if we just focus on sugar plums and rainbows and we don't call ourselves out on our own sense of holding ourselves back, then you will not feel successful in your own home. And there's no way you're going to help your child feel that successful in their own home as well if you don't feel successful yourself, right? As leaders, we go first. So here's the deal. I encourage you to take a real hard look at what expectations you have for your kid and whether or not you are telling yourself that your kid is not capable or whether or not they're capable. Are you doing that through your actions? Are you doing that through your body language? Are you doing that through your words to them? And if you are, number one, show yourself some compassion, because there's nothing wrong with you. It sucks to be in this problem and you're going to be reactive in it, right? It's part of the problem. And number two, let's solve it. All right. Let's not wallow. Let's not stay there. Right. Show yourself compassion, validate yourself that it's hard, and then move out of the sadness. Move it out of your body. Figure out a way to shake it off. We are happy to help you help yourself feel much more empowered in this process. Help your child move out of their own stuck places, and to do this consistently and effectively, so that the rest of your child's childhood is not swirling the drain of helplessness and you are helping your family reach to its highest potential. Totally possible. You and I both know that your child wants to achieve a lot in life. It is probably contributing to their perfectionism. If they don't have skills to manage their big emotions, it is likely that they feel sad that they can't reach that, and that's contributing to their low self-esteem or their low self-concept. And you are the therapeutic change agent in your home for your child. Your child learns how to tolerate difficulty and to demonstrate creative resiliency through you. And meltdown cycles end when parents teach their sensitive kids to be playfully resilient. So let this be a call to action for you. Let this be an inspirational conversation. Let this motivate you to notice that if you are not focused on that summit, or you've reduced the size of your kid's summit, then your child will continuously be frustrated, because listen, those same influencers on their other channel are touting about the fact that their spouse gives themselves a pat on the back because all they did was wash the dishes today and took out the trash, and they're sing-songing it. Is that the standard that you want for your child's adulthood? That they feel good that they wash the dishes that day and they need a sticker to do it? Or do you want them to be emotionally connected to their spouse, to be anticipating their spouse's needs, to be communicating above and beyond and leading and speaking positively into their own children, and to be noticing that their own children can be the best potential that they can be? If getting the dishes done at the end of the day after working very hard is all they can feel capable of and all they want to achieve, then there's something missing in their sense of capacity. Because your child is very gifted. They are very capable. And it's time to help them believe that now, so that they can feel regulated enough to tolerate their big dreams and work towards them one day at a time. And we look forward to having a conversation with you. Talk soon.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in hearing more about how to eliminate the meltdown cycle, I invite you to check out our free masterclass, where we cover the 5 steps our clients use to eliminate the daily meltdowns. You can register for the next training at meganthompsoncoaching.com/5steps. That's the number 5, STEPS. MeganThompsonCoaching.com/5steps. Have a great day.